This is the Chris Abraham Show.
Hey, this is Chris Abraham, the Chris Abraham Show, Season 6, Episode 5, and I'm wearing my 24-kilo backpack again. Huzzah, huzzah, huzzah. It means that I'm feeling strong and virile and studly and all those things. But to look at me, you wouldn't tell. I'm back down to losing weight as opposed to maintaining or plateauing. I'm popping on here on the way to Starbucks. This might be a two-parter. I might do the first half as I walk to Starbucks, and then the second half as I walk to Idito's. I still mean to do an article, an episode about personal space and putting down boundaries, but let me give you a sneak preview, Linda. Because I'm a lifelong codependent of alcoholism, and because I found growing up in Hawaii very threatening and sometimes dangerous, I always retreat, and long and short of it is I tend to hold my fire. I tend to try to exit the situation, and then I make, and so that's sort of like that's my solution. My solution, because otherwise, when I attack big, and I'm 300 pounds, and I'm 6'3", real 6'3", not dating up 6'3". And any kind of putting up boundaries in an aggressive way is always resulting in people flinching, freaking out, and crying. So what I do is I try to, if someone puts me in a place where I need to put up boundaries, I generally disconnect from them. I generally ghost them. I generally retreat to my own surroundings. It's not active armor. It's passive armor. It's probably kind of a passive-aggressive strategy learned from my growing up in Hawaii, where Japanese culture reigns supreme, and one is always trying to save face and save the face of the other person. So by retreating and then conspiring against them is sort of the unfortunate thing I probably need to go to lots of therapy for. Anyway, back to what I am talking about. Is his name Duterte, the former president of the Philippines? There's a new New Yorker interview today by, is it Resmik, the editor, the main editor, the managing editor, the head tamale of the New Yorker. And he's interviewing what a woman who calls herself a trauma journalist, and she works for a platform called Rappler. Is it called Rappler? Anyway, she's going on and on and on about Duterte, who is pretty much called the Donald Trump spirit animal, right? So there's this constant accusation that in 2016, well, the assumption is in this interview is that democracy is in danger, and I guess because of Trump, the entire world is now embracing nationalist populism, and ergo, because Duterte literally ran on the promise of killing drug dealers and criminals and theoretically drug addicts, and then actually did those things, I wonder if this woman who reports on what a terrible, bloodthirsty man Duterte is, I wonder if she realized that she was actually politicking for him, when you do realize that conservatives drink liberal tears, right? So if Trump goes out and says, I promise that I'm going to crush the narco-terrorism in this country, and I'm going to put criminals into jail, and I'm going to end the rampant street crime, and I'm going to crush lawlessness and looting and rioting, and I have the biggest hands, then when people report on him saying he'll actually do it, he'll actually send people to death row, and he'll throw all these inner city looters and rioters in a jail, and they'll be away from their family, and they'll never be free again. And he'll, I don't know, do all these other things. Then I feel like instead of necessarily sending people away from voting for someone like Duterte, Trump, or even Gaza, even, you know, in Gaza, they voted in democratically Hamas. They voted in Hamas, democratic elections. So I wonder if in a world where all we see on television are flooding of migrants, even cities like New York, San Francisco, Chicago, and L.A. having huge amounts of perceived homelessness encampments and people strung out on drugs in the public, not even in their little sexy opium dens in the middle of the streets, shameless. And everywhere they go, they smell the skunk of pot. And they're seeing people in blue and purple hair talk about their 43 different genders and all these other things. I mean, everything bad that you're ever going to say about Trump, and even everything bad that you're ever going to say about JFK Jr., is going to reinforce the fact that if they vote for Trump, he is not just a New York City actor. He's not just a pompous bag of air. Trump is, according to them, the biggest threat to social justice. And in a country that feels like social justice is the source of all evil, it is the, you know, the vocal cords of demons and all these other things, I feel like that's a pretty good sale. Anyway, I'll talk to you soon. Hey, this is part two. I had my breakfast and have a very large 8 shots of espresso next to me that I take black. So when I arrived, it wasn't there. Someone had taken it and they made me a new one because I ordered it all the way at my apartment. By the time I got here, someone had taken it. And I jokingly told the guy at the desk, the barista at the table, I said, well, he or she's in for a ride. So I'm listening to this woman. I think her name's Pat or Pam on this interview. I listened to a few more minutes of it. And the way she talks about herself is so film noir gumshoey. How do I get through it? I get through it with caffeine, nicotine, and alcohol. Love her. Anyway, my point is that the best way, here's a dating thing, right? In an environment of college or high school, or dating apps, apparently the top 1% of men in dating apps have access to 80% of the women on dating apps. So, and it's not because necessarily that you say how good a man is or how lovely a man is or how kind a man is or how selfless a man is necessarily. We all know the trope. And this is not just a woman and man thing. I mean, I love the bad girls. Like, every single woman I dated, except the women I rejected, were bad girls. And the women who were bad girls, I don't want to be in the club that'll have me kind of thing. And so this isn't just gendered. But everybody will fight over the asshole bad boy in school. Any woman who feels like she's competitive to be able to attract a man like that. Based on how beautiful she is, how whatever, adoring she is, how affable she is, whether she puts out or whether she puts out too much or not enough. Like, all these things don't attract until maybe later. Like, nice guys do well during second marriages, but nice guys do terribly poorly on first marriages. So everybody's going to, if you can convey, nobody's going to vote for Ramaswamy, because he has no edge at all. Jesus. Hillary had the wrong kind of edge. She had the disinvited list kind of vibe. Obama was sexy. I think there's kind of an edge to sexy, right? There's kind of an edge to sexy. I mean, he was handsome and he seemed like he was committed to his to the person he's married to and to his kids and all this stuff. But, you know, he has passions. You know, he was an activist. He was a community organizer. He was probably part of the Weather Underground, probably has time spent at Langley. Like, who knew, right? Dead sexy. So there's that. But you have to have kind of an edge about you. Like, whatever the opposite of Pence is, or whatever the opposite, oh my God, Ron DeSantis is, listen, boys, you can go to Harvard, you can go to Yale, you can go to Princeton. A woman might want to marry you if you're all those things because you're going someplace. But just because you were, you know, a jag-off or a jag officer in the Navy, having gone, I think, Rhodes Scholarships and Harvard, Yale, and maybe World Economic Forum, who knows, Rhodes Scholarship. In spite of all those things, he doesn't have what Plants, what is the term for Brondo? Brondo has what Plants want. So, I mean, Joe Biden tries. Joe Biden doesn't really have it. He has the dangerous. He has the, I will smother you with a pillow in bed while you're asleep vibe. And Trump really doesn't have a dangerous vibe at all. I mean, you know for a fact he wouldn't engage in fisticuffs. The only kind of fighting he does is by hiring lawyers and agents. But the more that the left, and this might be intentional, the left goes ahead and paints him as the second coming of Pol Pot, of Adolf Hitler, of, oh, what's the former head of Romania, Ceausescu, right? He is the Stalin, Lenin, etc. So the more he gets painted as being dangerous and killing bad guys and disappearing people and putting up and, you know, being a badass and sending out JSOC and having the Navy SEALs kill people. And that's another thing that Obama and Bush. And I'm told by someone who spent a lot of time with George W. Bush that he is charming and smart and kind and friendly and lovely and flirty and all these other things in person. So the yokel Joe Biden / Ronald Reagan, I'm just a simple man and I don't know much. I'm from Texas, et cetera. What I do is I clear undergrowth and I clear brush. That kind of thing is completely performative. So everything that anybody says that suggests that Trump is sexier, more dangerous, more powerful, more decider than he really is, because all he is like a rich guy from Manhattan who's from Queens or the Bronx who had money in his pocket. He never, unless you get me more information, he never kneecapped anybody. He was never an enforcer. He was never actually directly related to any type of mafia. He didn't do any street crime. He doesn't have a childhood. He's probably never taken a life by hand with blood where he can see the spirit leave the eyes. So anything that the mainstream media can do to convey him as a dangerous socialite, that's exactly what he is, as a dangerous sociopath, psychopath, person who's going to crush people of color. He's going to erase blackness. Anybody who can convince that maybe Trump is going to do pogrom or do Gaza or do ethnic cleansing in America of anybody who Western traditional rule of law culture believes is unlawful behavior and will ethnically cleanse them into private prisons or into the military or into a standoff with police who will probably kill them because it's never the crime, it's the escalation. That's going to encourage people. This is the time right now where, you know, a Le Pen is probably going to be the next person elected into France, and Germany's on the precipice. Liberal lefty Germany, who says even American Democrats are to the right, you know, like neolibs and neocons. Even they are going to get a rightist government that makes Angela Merkel seem center. Right now in Great Britain, there is a Conservative government. There are Tories in office. In spite of the fact that they've been doing an amazing job of tar and feathering them. So, and then you've got Hungary, and then you've got Poland, and then I guarantee you, after Vladimir Zelensky is finally taken out, he's going to be replaced by someone who gets along with Poland and Hungary. He's going to have to be replaced by someone who is able and willing to be in a room with Vladimir Putin. He might even be a person that draws Ukraine into BRICS instead of into NATO. Because all the words about BRICS from everybody that I know who are in the know, they're not threatened by it at all. They find it to be a club, a band of losers, nothing to be afraid of. So I really appreciate that. So I don't know. I feel like the reason why Duterte ever became president of the Philippines, and the reason Le Pen and the Democratic right-wing folly or whatever the... All I can think of is now is did not finish DFL, DNF. I forget what the oppositional party is when it comes to Germany. And then France, right? And then you have... Where else? Where else is going to probably fall? Poland is going to fall to right-wing extremism. And not even right-wing extremism. I'm translating for my three liberal listeners. What I mean all the time is nationalism and populism. I don't know if it's populist nationalism or nationalist populism or what it's called, but it is whatever Trump is, right? It is... And the more that the boot of climate change is pressed on the neck of the people, the more anybody who's ever been pro-climate change is going to be out of office. Anybody who's totally into ESG, and to be honest, DEI. I believe that in the same way that Disney is theoretically being crushed, and things like ROBY and Robin Hood has a popularity on Rotten Tomatoes of 1.3 out of 10, or is it 1.3%? I don't know. I haven't been in Rotten Tomatoes world in forever. And, you know, there's just the people are, I mean, they say it's like nerds or fanboys or whatever. But yeah, 80% of every public is filled with people, and 20% of every public, of every populace is filled with robots. And at the end of the day, the robots, and by robots, I mean, you know, people like me, neurodivergent, people who are not bell curve middle, people who I just call them robots. The robots can always get really close to short power under people, but people always outnumber robots. And to give it clear understanding, only robots go to Harvard. Only robots go to Yale. Only robots go to Princeton. Only robots go to Stanford. Some people go to Berkeley. Some people go to University of Chicago. Only robots go to, actually, Dartmouth has people. Brown has people. Columbia has people. NYU has people. Oxford and Cambridge has robots. GW has lots of people. Georgetown is people, Maryland is people, George Mason is people. So you get what I mean. People who make plans by saying things like, only I, the world has chosen me because only I can make the hard choices. I'm the only person who can make this hard choice. I am the only person who is willing to kill 1,000 to save one, or save one to save 1,000, or, raise all Palestinians to bring peace to the Middle East, or create a war in Ukraine because of how pissed Russia was that we grew into their property, or their property, very old stuff. Those robots should open a book once in a while and figure out the minefield that they're walking into trauma-wise. And you know what? They all do. And they realize that they can reactivate bloodlands. Holomador, Holomadir, Halalalalalalamamalamadir, and World War II and World War I and probably earlier wars.
and famines and death. And it was less than 100 years ago when Polish and Ukrainian people were eating each other. There was rampant capitalism about 100 years ago, 10 years from now. So all that fun. Pogroms, cultural revolutions, any new culture feels the need to go ahead and raise and destroy all the former robots. That's why Pol Pot killed everybody who wore glasses, because only robots wear glasses. Anybody a jock would call a nerd is technically speaking a robot. Anyway, so my point is, as I riff and raff and rant, my point is, all y'all, is that all y'all are encouraging instead of discouraging. It probably worked to make Trump look like a buffoon, but even if you make him seem like a rapist or a raper or a sexually assaulter, the NLP consequence of that is that he's a bad boy, he's a marauder, he takes what he wants, he doesn't let anything like a no get in his way, and people fear and respect that, right? All of us have these stories in our head about the opportunity not taken, the shot that we didn't take, the saying, which is, you miss 100% of the swings that you don't take. And at the end of the day, everybody believes, because there's so much lies churning in the media sphere, nobody believes these things. They believe that Trump got a BJ and got banged in a changing room in Bloomies, and he believes that he fucked hookers and he fucked porn stars and that he's banged women all over the place, doesn't care. He's had a number of wives, probably going to have another wife before he dies. He openly sexually objectifies his hot daughter. He does this, he does that. He doesn't give any fucks. He has fuck you money times 1,000. He has fuck you attitude. He is shameless. He's fearless. He's dangerous. You know for a fact that he has cleaners. He has people who do wet work for him. And you know that in his real estate world, he's had people, you know, beat the shit up and kicked out of town. You know that the guy is secret dangerous. So by just encouraging this behavior, this is, oh, okay. Now, I lived in D.C. pretty much off and on since 1988, and there was a prison here called Lorton Prison. Anyway, I think it's Lorton. Anyway, it was sort of like community college. It was like middle school, high school, community college, and grad school for a lot of inner city youths who ended up going there and learning how to be a real bona fide professional criminal. The way the system worked is drug dealing and kidnapping and carjacking and mugging, especially mugging, are all done by the babies, right? Like, I have 6 friends in D.C., not me, knock on wood. 6 friends of mine have been held up at gunpoint by 12-year-olds who had little shitty revolvers and got all their money and didn't shoot them, luckily. None of my friends would ever play heroes. None of my friends are armed. I think most of my friends might have had fun at a range, but have not put any like serious range time in. And probably none of them, except maybe Andrew, because I think he's a secret spy. And maybe Oliver, because he's the guy who finally got me into guns again at his bachelor party, which they had at a gun range outside of Philly. I don't know if they would know how to break down, field strip, and put together an AR-15 or a Glock 19 or even any type of pistol. Certainly not a Ruger of any sort. So that's what happens. What you do when you're selling drugs in the street or you're mugging or you're carjacking or whatever, you always make sure that the kids are underage, right? So when they get arrested, they probably are not going to go to jail. And if they go to jail, it'll be a juvie, unless there's a killing, in which case they might go to proper jail, proper prison. But they're still super young, and there can always be plausible deniability, right? Like if you have the young, and besides, that is the price they have to pay to get into the gang, right? If you take time away from your elder and you do the crime and you make the money and you steal the car and you get the catalytic converter, or you hold up Amy and Min and steal their money and credit cards, or you are the guy who holds the drugs so that if you get nabbed, you're under 16, under 18, and you're probably not going to do a lot of time. This is back in the day when street crime and drug crime and any crime would be prosecuted. Now it's catch and release. That's different. But Wharton, fuck. Anyway, it's closed now. But what would happen is kids would be going in, you know, 18, 19, 20. They might do a 2, 3, 5, 10, 20-year stint. They'd make a lot of criminal acquaintances in there. Everybody would be near enough. Families would be able to go out there. They would rent, you know, buses and stuff, and families and kids and wives and mistresses, associated people would go out there and be able to visit. It's like, you know, going to visit someone at the local school. Like if you live in the DC area and you're, anyway, I'll call you, I'll talk to you soon. All right, I'm back. This is going to be kind of the close, but, when you're at a party, I was in a fraternity, when you're at a party and there's a bunch of people around, this is also down to, if you will, down to voting, right? What you believe in your heart and what you do in the quiet and the darkness of the voting booth. I guess they're not dark. It's not like a crypt. But like what you do in the privacy of the voting booth is different than how you portray in the world. No boy, no girl, nobody wants to seem like too much of a slut, right? So you're always going to be like, I'm a good Catholic girl. I'm a good Catholic boy. But when you're at a party and everybody in the party is being like, oh man, that Mike is a dog. That Mike is a dog. That guy goes through him like toilet paper. Yo, crazy. Or like, that's what happened to me at UEA Norwich. Like I was there super early before everybody else because they wanted to kind of teach the year abroad students. They wanted to have a couple parties, a little bit getting to know before the regular students came in. And English men are extreme. Well, back in 1990, English men were extremely protective of their English roses. They, instead of going out and having sex in college, they would idealize having sex in college, or they would idealize and protect at the end of a rapier, at the end of a glove to the face, right? And I was there from America, and I was looking pretty good. I was a little bit beefy for a lithe Brit, but I was literally in the first. So I was third year, so I had the advantage of being 20, and most of these other students were first year students, and they were 17, 18, or 19, and I got there super early, and I was the first guy to have sex on campus, and everybody found out. And it made me really interesting over the course of my year, to the point where it completely screwed me towards the end of the year when I fell madly in love with a girl named Elizabeth Humphreys, Liz Humphreys, because she had heard my reputation and it shit all over my ability to be in love with her, which I really wanted to be. But in a small little, you know, in that world, the fact that I was supposedly, you know, a playa and supposedly came into town and like went to town and all this other stuff. And if you know me, you know I'm not a player, you know I'm not in any way, oh my God, I'm not remotely a Lothario. But you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So, maybe British boys are still that way. They're very shy. I think British women have to do all the work in order to continue the species moving forward. So anyway, at a bar or at a fraternity party, when everybody is talking about how awful this guy is and how the sex was awesome, he has a huge penis, but what an asshole, totally not boyfriend material. I don't have a big penis and I'm not an asshole. so disappointing, right? Like, I'm 6'3", like, lean, I'm about 220 pounds, and no, there's no big dick energy here. Anyway, so now I have to go ahead and label this. Since I said fuckity fuck fuck earlier, I have to label this as explicit. So it's my fault, you bastards. So as all these people are saying all these things, these terrible things about what an asshole Mike is, what a dick, how selfish, selfish lover, big dick, completely pushed me around. How dare that guy? He choked me. He tied me up. He took me from behind. I don't do butt stuff, but Mike made me do butt stuff. Like, all this stuff. And everybody's like, oh my God, he's so terrible. Oh my God, he's the worst. Oh my God, he completely sucks. You know? Next day, sliding into the DMs. Even if it's only for a roll in the hay. 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 Can you tell me what movie that's from? Anyway, so I want you to know that every time you try to other or... And, you know, this might be your plan. Your plan might be to make Bibi Netanyahu into the biggest stud ever. You're certainly making Zelensky into being a pretty big stud. But the fact that you're calling 4'6", Vladimir Putin, a dangerous guy, a ruthless, dangerous guy. Man, all the girls want to bang that boy. That girl's got that boy, Voldemort Putin, Vladimir Putin, Vlad the Impaler. That guy's got big dick energy, man. You can't kill him. He's unkillable. Man, he's like Castro. Fidel Castro's got big dick energy. Oh, man, you know, like Che Guevara is sexy AF, but you know Castro is a kinky fucking fuck. So anyway, I need to tell ChatGPT to let you know that I become a foul mouth monster. But yeah, I have a friend, I'll call him O. Like, once it got out in our friend community that he had, he was quite well endowed, everybody took a stab at that. Like technically speaking, he didn't even have to raise a hand. All of my buddy's wife's friends, like, jumped his bones. And I don't feel like there was a desire to make him their husband. I feel like there was a desire to get a piece of that. And when it comes to someone like Donald Trump or JFK Jr., or if you will, I don't know who else, the only two people who have big dick energy, the only three people who have big dick energy, the six, same thing with Russell Brand. Even my freaking politically correct lefty friend Mark said to me, no way any of those chicks got raped by Russell Brand. All those women knew exactly what he was about. They just got regret raped or regret assaulted. Like, I made a bad decision. I don't want to be associated with having done that. It's like back 20 years ago or even now. Like, it is extremely poor form. It's extremely poor form to out someone as gay, right? Outing someone as gay has been the worst thing in the world. It's your own journey when you come out as gay or queer or bi or gender non-binary or lesbian or whatever. It's your story to tell, and it's your job if you want to tell people. Entire families have known since the child was 5 years old, and it's just proper form not to call your child a fag. Usually, good families allow the coming out day to happen organically and then act a little surprised and then maybe six months down the road say, well, we kind of knew from when you were 5 years old. Same thing, like, it's really poor form to out someone as a slag, a slut, it's untoward to out someone's body count. 1,000 people, 500 people, 5,000 people, 100 people, over 30 people, over 50 people, over 10 people. It completely is untoward. So if you end up in the dead soldiers, in the empty bottles, the empty vessels that that Russell Brand cast away, you're going to be salty probably. He probably took liberties. that's the thing. Like, the thing that I'm not cool with in terms of modern dating is I don't, at 300 pounds and 6'3", I am not good with the simulated danger, the simulated I trust you rape fantasy, the simulated choking out, any of that stuff. Do a little hair, I'll do a little bit of hair pulling, I'll do a little bit of spanking. But aside from that, like, I do not in any way want to trust someone's life with simulated mayhem just because it turns someone on. My buddy Mark, on the other hand, at 5'10" and 150 pounds, can completely go wild, and he's generally the same height and weight of anybody he's with. So it's sort of more of an equal fight. And they can, you know, you can go to town if you're in the same weight class, right? Like, it's like a 300-pound wrestler doesn't go on the mat with a 120-pound wrestler. Not even in sparring. It's even dangerous in sparring. So like that. So back to that, like, if you hear that someone's willing to do stuff that you've always wanted to try, but you don't want to be a you don't want to feel like you're a slut in front of your boyfriend or a guy that you know that you might want to marry down the road when you get out of everything out of your system or whatever, like, body count has destroyed many a relationship. I don't think my relationship with Michelle survived the body count conversation. Yeah, the two conversations that have pretty much killed relationships before either of us have known it. In general, my relationships have been the body count conversation and the penis size conversation. Once I get an idea that you've had it, much bigger dicks, even with aphantasia and nestam, that seems to be the only thing that my mind can remember anytime I look at you. So rule number one of keeping and having a boyfriend, always tell him, oh my God, I've never been so full. I can barely take it. Let's slow down. I need a little while to get used to you. I'll breathe into it, baby. Maybe we need more lube, things like that. So finding out that I have a comparatively small penis compared to the huge dicks kills a relationship. And finding out, surprisingly, if I know going in, you know, caveat emptor, but if I find out later that my sweet little princess is 1,000 deep, and I include any kind of like oral or whatever, like in that number, then I have a hard time getting that idea out of my head. Let me remind you, even though I sound like a asshole, I'm not dating currently. I have no desire to date, and I probably haven't really dated since a long while, too long. But like I was telling a girl I was just talking to when I cut the recorder just a second ago, I need a girlfriend like a fish needs a bicycle. On the other hand, she did say I look really svelte and like I've lost a lot of weight, so I will marry her if she asks me. What else? Yeah, so long story short, people vote the way people date. They tell you that they want Joe Biden, but they actually really just want Donald Trump, because they do not want to actually have people knock on their door, even though they have a sign out front that says all oppressed are welcome here. They don't want actually everybody, even the most generous profile image of the day, whether it's a black profile or a Ukrainian flag profile or an Israeli flag profile or a Palestinian flag profile or Asian and Pacific Islander profile, whatever. The people who do profile a day, if you scratch them, what comes out isn't blood, but NIMBY, not in my backyard. The offer of sanctuary cities were contingent based on the fact that none of those cities were anywhere near to the border, where the border crisis was happening. And the hundreds of thousands of people that have been flown and bused to those cities have very quickly overwhelmed them and are going to very quickly result. And even the street criminals are going to be like, back off, yo. So who's going to know? Who's going to see? I can't even tell what's going to happen in November 2024. I have no prediction. I just know that every time you throw another indictment at Trump, it just makes him stronger. It's like one of those supervillains who absorb your superpowers every time you try to attack them, and then they come at you with your own superpower. The newest superpowers that Trump has gotten have been precedence, like a precedence, precedence. In other words, every time someone comes after him and it goes through and a precedent was set, like this RICO law stuff that happened in Atlanta, 1 week later, Antifa people are being accused based on these RICO laws that Trump has shown can be used for something besides conspiracy or organized crime. So the beautiful thing is that every time, oh, what is that? It's like I'm watching Buffy season 5 and season 6 right now, that chip that they put in Spike's head. Every time he attacks a human, a searing pain goes into his head. Every time you attack Trump, a searing pain goes back to the Democrats. Every time you attack the 80%, a searing pain goes back to the robots. It's like that thing of Asimov, right? Do no harm towards humans. 80% of the people are humans. 20% are robots. Every time robots try to hurt people, try to hurt humans, they get a searing pain in their head. And I don't know when they'll realize that they need to leave well enough alone, because they keep on picking at it. And if everybody believes that the country has Palestinian terror cells, Islamic, and they see Biden build walls, like Trump said, and then limit flights. Like, if they literally see Biden do a Muslim ban like Trump did, and they start seeing Biden be Trump, then they're going to vote for Trump, because they might as well have a younger Biden anyway. They might as well have a ballsier Trump. So this is just going to, you guys are right. You guys really need to put him in jail, or have him take him out or something, because everybody's going to vote for him. Progressive populists are going to vote for him because they see the way that the establishment is treating anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian activism. They're seeing that it's not the canceling, the assault on free speech and the censorship isn't only being levied at the thing that they hate, which is right-wing extremism, Christo-fascism. It's actually being levied at all enemy of the Democratic Party, the establishment neo-lib Democratic Party. So if you're to the left of that, and to the left of that, there's more humans, but progressive populists. So the establishment middle, and I'm including neocons in that, like Nikki Haley and Pence and all the other war pigs that are calling Vivek Ramaswamy crazy because he doesn't support unfettered access. I'm including Lady Mitch McConnell. I'm including all those Lady Mitch McConnells that are pro-war, that are war pigs, that are unfettered access, that are any type of establishment people who are either from the family tree of John McCain, or from the family tree of Dick Cheney, or the family tree of Morning Joe Mika. Those are like the three Abrahamic trunks of what neo-lib, neo-con. The neo-con trunk is like Brzezinski. So Mika Brzezinski is the neo-lib definer. Her dad is the definer of what neo-lib vision and strategy are. Him and that 100-year-old, 99-year-old aide to everybody, forgot his name. And, of course, John McCain is the patron saint of the neocons, and along with anyway, so you get my point. To the left, there are socialist, progressive populists, which are people and humans, and to the right, there are nationalist populists, which are humans. And in the middle, holding all the power, are people who more and more don't seem like they have our own best interests in mind. Looting, stores leaving, desert, food deserts, 117th Street, Target being closed, Market Street, Walmart's being closed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're going back in time. inner city Black communities are losing their access to cheap, affordable merchandise. This might be the result of unrestrained, unindicted, uncharged, unimprisoned, bailed criminals, homeless people, homeless encampments, outdoor, shame-free, marijuana, meth, and what's that favorite one? The one that everybody's dying from now. The one that I have Narcan for, you know. Anybody, you know, out of sight, out of mind, man. You bring it into sight. That's why I think it's intentional. I think that progressive leftists who support extreme social justice are feeling like at some point their enclaves are going to be defiled by criminality, home invasions, and it'll be in their backyard. So I think passive aggressively, they are hyping up the enemy in such a way that's going to make humans want to vote for Trump or someone like him, and driving them to people like Tucker Carlson, driving them to people like Tulsi Gabbard, driving them to people like, I hate to say it, like Andrew Tate, driving them to people like Tim Pool and all the other guys. So on that note, this is extremely long. I love you. I'll talk to you soon. Mahalo. Goodbye. And tomorrow's episode will be season 6, episode 6. Anyway, aloha, mahalo. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Chris Abraham Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Until next time.